Thanos! In honor of Avengers Endgame, what genre film has your favorite climactic death?
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm going very off-brand with Spock's death at the end of Wrath of Khan. That's right, I've seen Wrath of Khan, and I remember it, and it's great, and it doesn't really even matter that much that they undid it in the next movie.
I'm Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with a death that really stuck with me for the last 20 years. So random. It would be Clayton, the villain from the Disney version of Tarzan, who accidentally hangs himself in a vine at the end of the movie. A horrific thing to see.
And I'm David the Seven, and I'm going with the Joker from 1989's Batman, and happy 82nd birthday to Jack Nicholson.
And I'm David Ehrlich, and I can't believe that Superman died in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
My favorite climactic death is the death of cinema when the next Marvel movie comes out. Wah.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 255, and it's the week of Wednesday, April 24th, which was New Kids on the Block Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Or I guess it still is. It was declared in 1989 by then Governor Michael Dukakis. So
we haven't checked if it was abolished for reasons unknown.
They probably would have had to pass a law.
Actually, usually I don't further look these things up, but this is one of those rare occasions where I did. It is still New Kids on the Block Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
If you're from Massachusetts, please tell us how you celebrate New Kids on the Block.
our hearts.
I hope there are special foods. David is not with us this week. We don't know why. He's gone somewhere. But I hear we have reviews anyway.
We have one review, and this is from the American store, and we promise we're going to look at more of the international soon. I just definitely forgot to do that with David gone, and I apologize. But this review is from iTunes user Rupik, who says, I thought this show was canceled. 5 stars. Oh, wait, actually it says 10 out of 10 stars. iTunes needs more stars to give. I've listened to this show since 2015 and could truthfully say it is the GOAT. I look forward to hearing from all the hosts and have come to love each one for their own unique quirkiness. David, if you don't mind, please read the following in your best Australian accent.
Whoops. Oh, no.
Sorry, David. He's not here. I guess
I like that hat, mate.
Yeah.
Okay. Just get into that flow.
Mr. Ian Baker. No, that's more New Zealand. I'm not going to do this. Leave these Ripper mates a 5-star review and we'll have a coldie. I'm sure that was spot on. Thank you. P.S. Please tell Dave and Patches to upload the final episode of Fighting in the War Room. It was honestly one of the funniest bits and really want to give it another listen. You guys rock. Sincerely, Kyle. Well, Katie loved that episode too, and she.
Thank God
asks,
I'm here to keep you guys from canceling the podcast again.
It is notorious. It is.
I do like that it has achieved episode. A myth. Yeah, because it was taken down.
The one episode, our editorial policy, we didn't have an established rule set for our journalistic standards, so we took down content.
I just can't leave anymore. You should leave us reviews. David will read them when he gets back. He will have many bad accents waiting for you. Several months since the existence of Disney Plus was announced, Disney is going to have its own streaming service. Eventually, all their movies won't be on, or their most recent movies won't be on Netflix the way that we have been enjoying. And then on April 11th, they had an investor call that was ahead of the big Star Wars celebration weekend. And they announced the rate that it will cost per month. And I was fully prepared for them to charge me, you know, $40 a month as a parent because I would probably pay it. But I believe it's a pretty reasonable, what, $8 a month? $7 a month?
$7 a month. $6.99.
So they're kind of going for Netflix's lunch, which everyone expected. And I was reading this article in Variety, kind of looking at the amount of content that they're going to have, because Disney announced that they're going to have 7,500 episodes of current and past TV shows and 500 movies, which sounds crazy. But that's just 16% of what Netflix has in the US, and 12.5% of their movie library. So I was actually surprised by that. I didn't realize how much stuff was on Netflix, which might say something about the value you get out of that breadth of content. But we haven't talked about Disney Plus at all. And I, as I said, I feel as a parent kind of resigned and frog marched into this whole thing. Are you guys excited about it in a way that I should be catching on to?
Yes.
Okay. No, I'm not. Because it also feels inevitable, because I also feel like I can't turn away from it. I don't like, I'm totally neutral. It's like cable all over again. I'm just buying the channels that I want.
I'm not against that perspective.
Against being neutral?
I'm not like suddenly for the absorption of everything by Disney because like there's a product that I like, but from a consumer end standpoint of this is inevitable, like, the details of the product seem great. Like, I mean, there's less content, but it is Disney content, so it's of a different quality. Back when we were, you know, subscribed to Netflix, back when it was like watch instantly, there was like months of our lives where it was just like weed documentaries and like films that you would like never see in anybody else's catalog. And like that might have been quantity, but it wasn't always quality. Netflix has been making more moves in that direction. It's going to be great to see Disney do its version of that.
What will be Disney Plus's Jiro Dreams of Sushi, the movie that everyone watched because it was just right there?
What a good poll.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still on Netflix. So.
It's going to be like the 50s Alice in Wonderland. It's going to be some weird like animated movie that no one has thought about in forever, but like suddenly has a surge in popularity.
I mean, I guess the thing with Disney Plus is that it's all content we know, and it just feels like churning or wringing the properties we know for more and more, as opposed to, like, I'm more excited for this Disney Fox merger to produce interesting shows on Hulu, I hope. I'm more interested in the growth of that platform as like a Buena Vista for a future
Disney
generation.
And Fox Disney's gonna be producing shows. Disney is going to be producing shows for Hulu under the Fox banner? What?
So with the purchase of Fox, Disney becomes one of the majority shareholders in Hulu. And so that's going to become their island for their R-rated content, their non-four quadrant content, which is going to be off of Disney Plus. So there is a possibility that, you know, you have all your aliens and your predators and your, you know, like
I think
serious
that's what
dramas
will happen.
Over on Hulu, and that will expand at least Hulu's ability to compete with Netflix.
What about
going to
they'll put movies on there too, is what you're saying? Like they'll have the Alien franchise Hulu?
I mean, that's the hope. And then there's also going to be some of Disney's output. It will also be Disney Plus oriented. So the live action version of Lady and the Tramp is going to be on Disney Plus, not necessarily theatrical release. And I think that there's going to be a Marvel movie ending up there sooner rather than later. We just don't know anything about what Marvel's doing right now.
Sooner rather than later? What do you think it would be? What are you implying?
Maybe something that you think is an early release next year and I think is another.
Why don't you just come out with it? I think Black Widow is coming out next May and you think it's going straight to Disney Plus. You think Scarlett Johansson would star in a movie for Disney Plus?
Yeah, I mean, they already have what?
You're out of control.
They have WandaVision, which is...
It's actually insulting that you
Olsen
think...
Olsen and Bettany. They have Renner doing Hawkeye. They have Hiddleston back as Loki. They have Winter Soldier and Falcon limited series.
Let me just say, how dare you equate Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner or Scarlett Johansson in any of these TV shows that you're talking about?
Every single Avenger movie equates Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner. What makes you think that they've like something's changed in that?
They do not. That was when Jeremy Renner was kind of famous. Now he's not, so he gets a Disney Plus show and Scarlett Johansson gets an actual theatrical Black Widow movie after being in these movies for hella long time.
So the way Kevin Feige is talking about it, the Disney Plus content, is this is the promise that we were supposed to have with the Marvel Television Division in the first place, is like, this is going to be fully integrated. And what better way to do that and then also back up that swagger than to say, not only are these shows integrated, but the MCU continues on Disney Plus in movie form. Boom. And then drop.
I'm already so tired trying to figure out what's going to be on Disney Plus and what's going to be on Hulu. And all I can hope is that my Apple TV will let me say, like, watch Crimson Tide. As long as you have where it is.
Well, all you need to know is that anything Buena Vista or Mature that's not directly beaming out of a pillar of the Disney brand, if it's not Disney, Pixar, Marvel, MCU,
Star Wars,
or actually National Geographic is the other pillar of Disney Plus, then it's probably going to be on Hulu. And even some Marvel stuff, they're doing these Marvel cartoon shows. Kevin Smith's writing one, Patton Oswalt's writing one about, like, Howard the Duck. They're going to do more mature content on Hulu, and Fox properties will have a life there too. I think my general feeling about Disney Plus, and of course it's inevitable, Katie, you and I have kids. It's like, we want to have access to those classic movies that we'll watch on repeat. This was our childhood and we'll pass it down. I mean, it's just a staple. We can't escape it. But like, I don't know why this feels like such a drain. And I don't think it's just a symptom of us having to think about this stuff all the time for our jobs. I think this is what the culture of the times is. Just, there's too much television. There's too much programming. I wish this was $4 less and just had classic movies. I don't need new content. Like, I know that a Star Wars TV show starring Pedro Pascal as the Mandalorian is going to be somewhat cool. I have no faith in Jon Favreau being a showrunner, but whatever. It's going to have Star Wars in it. I'll be happy. I like Star Wars, but like, there's too much Star Wars. It's too much Marvel.
You're
so
jumping
what you're saying
so far.
Is peak
far.
TV.
Double.
No,
peak
no.
TV.
He wants to unbundle fucking streaming services. Like already, you've already skipped the whole step of having the streaming service with all the stuff you want, and now you're like, yeah, but if I shaved off Star Wars for a few months, wouldn't you charge me a little bit less?
Wait, I want to bundle all the streaming services so that, like, I don't have to like add up how much I'm paying for Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and CBS All Access and suddenly realizing I'm paying as much as cable.
That seems like a normal thing, but what Patches is saying is I would like 21 things that are all cheaper so I could like choose like my like,
I guess I'm getting to a point where I don't even know what I want anymore. Like, I don't.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Less content.
I don't want any platform. I just want to sit on my TV home screen, my Apple TV home screen, and be like, I don't know what to do, and just sit there for 3 hours in silence.
Well, I was like sharing with you guys, I think like a week and a half ago or something, that like I've collected certain things that are going to be suddenly like streaming on Disney Plus just so I could have them on a hard drive somewhere and have access to them whenever I want, and put them in crazy orders since I like organizing things like that. But like, this is like a blessing to me in terms of that, because like, some of these things I have are like old AVI formatted things from old internet, then that's like the last time somebody uploaded a complete collection of blank shorts from 1940 whatever, or like some of the Alice shorts. I don't think those are going to end up on Disney Plus, but if they suddenly scramble for content, yeah, they're much more likely to end up on Disney Plus than they have ever been to end up on any other format. Like, you could throw up some restored blank on Disney Plus and drive content to that for a week, and you haven't spent any of the money to print a new DVD and have a undoing the vault, you know, sort of PR push.
This is an only you problem.
I don't think so.
I hope that Disney Plus becomes a home for the true vault of Disney, the true, we were just talking about
Song of the South.
That has been officially nixed.
They're never releasing Song of the South.
No, that has been, according to a report that just came out this week, that Song of the South and then bits of Dumbo, I think.
Oh yeah, they're taking the crows out of Dumbo. That's so crazy.
Now that's an interesting line, like, so, Katie, this is exactly what we're talking about, with Disney Plus being this kind of like censored happy place, and
sure,
Hulu being a creative space, in quotes, but like a more adult place. But like, where's the line here? We were talking
I know.
Over at Polygon about like, okay, if you erase part of Dumbo, do you erase all of Peter Pan? Where do the bad things?
Well, I'm looking at the Buena Vista like history on Box Office Mojo, because like everything Disney ever leases is listed as Buena Vista on Box Office Mojo, which is confusing. But like While You Were Sleeping, which one is that going to be on? Because that's a Buena Vista release, or Dead Poets Society, like all kinds
Hulu,
of things that
the future
seem crazy that they are wherever a Disney release, given the way that the company has evolved. But
Mighty Ducks.
How about Saving Mr. Banks?
Like, button push. No, that Saving Mr. Banks is firmly on Disney Plus.
Okay, but it's like not for kids, but it's like about
Walt
Disney.
Well, they have like Christopher Robin on here. They have Black Beauty.
All right, Pat, just War Horse. Where's War Horse going to go?
That's like I feel like with Spielberg, you got to bring that on to Disney Plus. You got to get all
but
that.
But it's
A-list
like super
talent.
Violent.
Well, all the Pirates movies are going to be on. I was just watching Pirates 3, a movie I completely forgot, At World's End. My God, that movie is violent. Davy Jones stabs a lot of people in the chest with his sword. But these movies are going to make it onto Disney Plus. Anything that's like entrenched in the Disney brand is definitely going to be on Disney Plus. Anything that doesn't feel immediately Magic Kingdom-y is going to be on Hulu.
Lincoln. Where's Lincoln?
God, they have a Hall of Presidents at Disney, so he should be on Disney Plus. I don't know. There's no, you know, we're just getting to this point where like we can't say no to any of this stuff. And I wonder why. Is it because we just want the full access? Like, I think a few years ago, I would have been happy to have the Disney platform, have the Warner Brothers platform, have the Paramount platform. And just like, I want all the movies at my fingertips. And I would have been happy. But there's something about like, we've crossed a threshold with the amount of content.
But how much they're asking you for?
It's not even the price, I don't think. It's just...
It's the mental energy of turning on your Apple TV being like, fuck, where is this thing that I'm looking for?
Like, can either of you imagine subscribing to Apple Plus?
I mean,
that's the real
presumably
test.
We all will.
Well, presumably we might out of morbid curiosity, but that's what I think. The interesting thing about Disney Plus is how it's going to be $7 is actually pretty reasonable. And if you pay up front, if you do a whole year up front, you get it for $70. So it's even cheaper. It's about $5.83 a month. And Netflix is obviously just increased. Everyone is getting a Netflix price hike.
Mm-hmm. I got an email.
Yep. And so Disney is totally going low, and it actually really screws with these places that don't have the backlog, the automatic buy-in, the catalog, like Apple Plus. What is that going to cost? Or like even Warner, when they do a streaming service, what is that going to cost now? So maybe Disney has either saved us all money because no one will be able to match this price, or they'll have to try because they, especially with Apple, like there is not, they have nothing interesting. They have no catalog, back catalog.
They have no, it's crazy that Apple's launching without a back catalog at all.
Yeah, nothing. And then, I mean, maybe.
But we also don't know how much they're going to ask us to pay, or if we can like subscribe to like the morning show and then like decide if we want Apple. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
their price structure will be interesting.
Apple's going to come in more towards Netflix.
Right.
Because
I think you're right.
The difference is Disney Plus has an entire other business arm that's worried about making content, whereas Netflix and Apple Plus, this is going to have to be the way they fund their content.
Well, what's the next Game of Thrones, Dave? What channel is it on? I'll subscribe to that one.
The next Game of Thrones is the upcoming sixth season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow on CW.
Well, I wish we were sponsored by that. That would have been perfect.
Give us the money. So this past weekend, some of you may have been celebrating holidays with family. I kind of was, just in name only, saw my family, which for me mostly means whenever my kid is asleep, I'm watching real television. I don't have cable at home, and my parents do, so I'm always curious.
Oh, this explains something, because you said you watched like half of a bunch of movies. I was like, what, did you get cable all of a sudden?
Yeah. Well, that's where I watched part of At World's End, and then I watched a lot of Buzzer, my actual favorite cable channel, which is all the old game shows.
Is it not called Game Show Network anymore?
Well, the Game Show Network exists, but they also do their own game shows. Buzzer is classic game shows, so I could watch like 90s era supermarket sweep and really spend a lot of time thinking about what the rules are and how do you get points at the big sweep at the end. Anyway, that's not the point.
Over, you get the hams. You get a bunch of hams.
You buy a lot of hams.
Coffee.
But also medicine is key. Why don't they just go for all the medicine? They're so expensive. Anyway.
And they're small.
What I'm really getting at here is I watched The Matrix. Now, a lot of people have been writing about The Matrix because the Wachowskis hacker techno thriller has, it celebrated a 20th anniversary this year. And clearly this movie has made an impact. I mean, from Wire Food to Bullet Time to the looks and, of all the costumes, like we still think about The Matrix quite a bit. And it's astounding to think that somebody got, probably 63 million dollars, according to this random Wikipedia page I'm looking for, the budget to do an original science fiction film like this. I guess my real question for you guys is like, what, if you haven't seen the film recently, what stands out to you? Because watching it now, it's so tiny. I think that's what's great. The sequels blew it up, and it's this huge mythos, and the Wachowskis clearly had great ambition for where this franchise could go, and obviously they had to start tinier. There was a whole world here, but it was really just Neo's story and going down the rabbit hole to figure out where he was in this crazy world. You know, in the 20 years since this movie has come out, both of the Wachowskis have transitioned. They're both trans. Lily and Lana are beacons of hope for people working in this industry and being themselves. And, you know, I don't know where their careers are going now. They may come back to The Matrix. That seems almost inevitable at this point. Certainly.
Oh, no.
Warner Brothers has talked about it in their grand plans for the future. And I would actually not mind that. They've taken a lot of shots and done their creative project, spent hundreds of million dollars on things that made not a dime, which is unfortunate, but they're beautiful.
I wonder if I would predict more that the Wachowskis never make another movie than that they make another Matrix.
God, I hope that's not true. I really
Kind of seems like that, doesn't it? Like that they're not really that interested in making movies anymore?
I don't know. I mean, certainly in this version of Hollywood, it sucks, but in the version of Hollywood in 1999 where they could pull this off, this is clearly like a film about finding your true identity. And a lot of people have written great criticism about this as a trans identity portrait and exploration. And certainly not something I thought about as a teenager seeing this movie in 1999. But I don't know. What stands out to you about The Matrix? Does it beam through history? Does it have a legacy for either of you?
Yes.
Dave is raising his... I can see Dave. He's raising his eyebrows. Video's great.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's fantastic. First of all, The Matrix will always kind of be tied to the shootings at Columbine for me because those happened the same year. This weekend was also the 20th anniversary of that. And I remember it being like a very forward conversation on everybody's mind, like dinner tables, school, like teachers, like having like weird asides about it. Was like, was this movie that everybody liked before Columbine came out suddenly different, because of especially like gun violence and how, you know, they sort of don't deal with, in a small part of Colorado, we had the whole, Superman shouldn't destroy Metropolis debate with, the Matrix like shootout scene. Like, here are all these humans that are being used by machines. They're just plugged into guards, and Neo and Trinity sort of shoot them non-discriminately. Both because, you know, it was weird to be a teenager at that time and being told a lot of the things you liked were, like, suddenly influencing you negatively. Heavy metal music, video games, The Matrix. I got way into The Matrix. And so The Matrix's legacy to me will always be, like, a perfect window into a story world. You're right, Patches, that it reads really well as a trans story. It also reads as like your basic outsider hero's journey thing. It uses these big metaphoric languages and ideas like the one or the blue pill or the red pill to give a peek into this world that we didn't necessarily need answers to. So the golden age of Matrix for me is the build up to the second movie with things like the Animatrix or the video game or a lot of the short fiction or philosophy in the Matrix books sort of coming out and doing these like deep criticisms with the story world.
Full transmedia experience.
Exactly. I love the transmedia experience.
That is not surprising at all.
I know.
I don't want to make a super hot take, and because we're making this a mini segment, it's been discussed a lot. But do you think that the Matrix's legacy can sit apart from all the red pill nonsense that has emerged from it as well? Like the fact that this movie by trans women has also inspired the worst chauvinist behavior on the internet, not their fault at all, but it's this weird irony that no one seems to know what to do with, and no one seems to know how to disentangle the Matrix from all the assholes who have taken it to mean all the wrong things.
Yeah, you wonder why things that seem so pure and genuine and about something liberating end up being these Rorschach tests for people. You know, rewatching it now, you can't help but in the back of your head seeing Lawrence Fishburne sit there with the red pill, blue pill, thinking about all the rhetoric online at this point. But it's so specific, too. Like, in the movie, it's pure cinema. In the movie, you get the reflective glasses. You get the special effect that's so ingenious. And then you get all the kung fu. And you get, actually, just seconds before that, we see Neo get pulled into the back of the car. And they pull that, like, tracker bug out of his belly. And that's something I think about all the time. It's just, like, it's so specific. And the design of that machine is so odd. Like, every frame of this movie is like, how did they come up with this idea? How is it so dense? This is what happens to, I don't know, every pure thing on the internet gets corrupted. It's true to the Matrix. This is, what is that face you're making?
Every pure thing on the internet gets corrupted is like, you ruined my Ghostbusters by making a new Ghostbusters. You had your fucking Ghostbusters. You had your Matrix. I'm sorry it continued for other people and disappointed you. That doesn't take it away. You can't let people claim good movies for bad purposes and then just be like, well, we lost that one now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm not going to tell people to watch Fight Club, but if I rewatch Fight Club, I'm not going to be like, let's rewatch this from a modern perspective because that's going to make me enjoy it more. No, I'm going to watch it as the movie I enjoyed in 1999 as like a dumb, impressionable child.
Well, luckily, no, they haven't globbed onto, like, Neo's path, right? There's just one. They've globbed onto the phrase, and then there's so much more movie after that. There's so much more plight and terror imagery, like when he wakes up in the cocoon and that, what are they called, Dave? What are the robots? I don't know. The Sentinels! That's actually, looking at the special effects from 1999, all CG Sentinels with some like practical arm effects. Just like every second of this movie, even on TV, even cut up into commercial breaks on the Paramount Network, the just worst way to watch a movie. This really got under my skin. There's a scene where Neo eats gruel for the first time too, where I was just like, this rules. Like, life sucks. And you wake up from your fantasy world and life is worse. And Joe Pantoliano, like, eating a perfectly cooked rare steak in the Matrix and being like, take me back to fantasy. I don't know. A parable we can all relate to now. Like,
remember,
we're all looking to get clogged and hook me up to Disney Plus and pump the juice into my head. I don't want to think about the real world. That's Dave.
Yeah, eat your steak, I guess. Dave. Before your child was born, I was like, what you should do is chain her so she only sees shadows on the wall and thinks those are real. And then at some point in your life, you could bring her out of the cave and blow her mind.
Yep.
So like, yeah, that's life. That's life, Patches. It's pain and it's horrible and it's gruel, but you're free. You're not machine slaves.
Well, there are real people out there who think that we live in the Matrix. But guess what? If we do, we got a movie version of it, and you can watch it, and it's still good.
Yay! I have much more respect for We Live in the Matrix people than Pandora's a Real Place, and I Want to Go There people that happened after Avatar.
Is that
you don't know Pandora's not a real place.
That's true.
I guess that's true.
True story. No glory. Let's go. Yeah, the old me used to love a Gemini. Like a threesome, fucking with him every night. A lot of two-faced people show me both sides. So I figured out I gotta be my own type. They used to say to get a man, he had to know how to look.
This week, this Thursday, And then at 17 AMC theaters in America for 72 straight hours, Avengers Endgame is finally hitting theaters.
Ending the game.
Ending the game. The 22 film, three phase, 10-year saga of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Sorry, Dave, it's called the Infinity Saga.
It is?
Whatever.
According to Kevin Feige.
Oh, I don't like that.
I don't know how much he gets to name his own things, but sure.
He's the
Infinity
man
saga.
In charge. I think he has earned the right to name the saga.
Maybe. I think it belongs to us now, Patches. That's not important. The important thing is, it's a long road to a conclusion. I don't, like, other series that, have lasted this long, at least time-wise, you have your, like Harry Potter movies are based on a book, or like James Bond series, which are, you know, don't come to natural conclusions until very recently, apparently. It's different in terms of keeping things in your mind. So I want to run a test with Katie Rich. Regarding Avengers Endgame, Katie, how many of like the recent Marvel movies have you seen?
Technically all of them.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think I ever finished Thor Ragnarok. And
got it.
I watched Guardians 2. No, I watched all of Guardians 2.
Should this podcast have a trigger warning for some of our listeners?
I mean, all of these movies are on Netflix, so it's not like I'm like exhibiting some privilege at this point.
Not all of them. Some of
them
are disappearing.
The recent ones that I'm like
after
like,
the Kevin Feige snap that's sending them all to Disney Plus.
I watched Doctor Strange on a plane. I watched Infinity War on a plane, except for I watched the first 45 minutes the other day, which is how this segment started.
Yes. Because Katie remembered that Loki died, which reminded me of something she said before Game of Thrones, which is like, what if Littlefinger won? Which made me think, I would like to know what Katie Rich thinks Avengers Endgame is about. You've seen, I'm presuming, a trailer or two.
Yes, although I realized that I had not watched the Spider-Man trailer until yesterday. I just forgot. It looks good.
Okay, good.
Hot
yes,
take
you've
from
seen
January.
The Spider-Man trailer. that might also complicate the Avengers Endgame plot predictions, but we'll see. So, Katie, we ended Infinity War. I hate to spoil it for you, with half of our heroes getting snapped away,
yes.
And then pretty soon after that, the movie was over. How does Avengers Endgame start?
I mean, I know that they're all in one place. Well, so I saw Captain Marvel, and I saw the post-credit scene where she shows up, and they're all in one place, and it's Black Widow and Thor? Yeah. And Captain America.
I'm not sure Thor's there in the post credits scene, but
I thought she talked to Thor.
Who did she talk to in that scene? She talked to Thor in a trailer later.
If we're gonna get through this, don't correct Katie. Yes, and Katie, as she goes through the plot.
I have forgotten the face of my improv fathers.
Here's the rules for Patches and I. We can't confirm or deny if any of the characters she talks about are there or dead or alive.
Yeah,
I
remember that Spider-Man disappeared in a big cloud of dust at the end of, don't really remember who else got snapped at all.
All right,
and I
cool,
know
perfect.
That there were the character posters that like, if you were snapped, you're in black and white, and Shuri was alive? I remember no one knew what had happened to Shuri. And I'm colorblind and it told me nothing. I mean, would it be more helpful for me to tell you what I do know about Endgame just like in one go? Because I don't know. Like, I know that Captain Marvel shows up and they're all in one place.
They've
and I know. Oh, and Ant-Man comes back from the Quantum Realm, which I didn't understand until I watched Ant-Man and the Wasp like 2 days ago. I didn't know why he got stuck in the Quantum Realm. So that told me. I don't know how he gets back. Are we supposed to know how he gets back?
We don't technically know how he gets back.
He gets back because we see him and like looking around confused and he shows up.
What did you think of Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I liked it.
A necessary aside here.
It's like low-key and charming and Michael Pena is really funny. And I don't like there's like a grindiness to the plot at some point where they're like, oh, they got to find the thing. Then they're going to find the villain and then there's going to be a scene. Like It's funny. And it's like, and Paul Rudd like wears it all really lightly. So,
some people
you know,
hate that movie. It's so
people
fun.
Hate that movie?
It's such a charming movie. That team.
It's charming.
It's a good team. Good little team.
Michelle Pfeiffer is badly used. It's weird that they cast her to do not much.
So like stand up. I think there were supposed to be more scenes of her hanging out in the Quantum Realm. I would not be surprised if that got nixed both for time and for Endgame logic cohesion, but we'll see.
Oh, I don't understand the logic.
Apparently
cohesion.
She was like hunting quantum animals to feast upon so that she could survive in quantum realm.
Okay, so Paul Rudd eventually gets back together with Black Widow, Captain America, Captain Marvel,
Shazam.
Guy, Shazam, obviously, who's in the Marvel Universe for sure. and Iron Man's in space, and he's running out of food, but I don't remember why. Doctor Strange is in space. I don't remember why. Because they're all there when Chris Pratt fucks up things with Thanos for a reason that I don't remember.
You're talking about Infinity War here?
Yeah, I'm talking about what happened in Infinity War, just like who's where.
I'm following your thought process. You're doing very well.
We're on Titan.
I think all the Guardians of the Galaxy are still in space. I don't think any of them are on Earth. I don't know where Thor is. I was thinking that Thor had seen Captain Marvel. I don't know. I think because he was in space last time we saw him, right?
I really threw you off with that. I mean, at the end of Infinity War, he does go back to Earth.
Okay.
His thunder... axe Stormbreaker, I believe.
Oh yeah, because he's in the battle scene in Wakanda.
Yeah, he comes slamming down. He slaps, he fucks, you know, as the kids say.
I don't know if
pull it off.
I don't remember if he disappeared. Really? I'm literally trying to think. Oh, the other thing I can't remember is who disappeared and who actually died. That's the Loki thing, like Loki actually dying. He's like actually dead, right? Like that's not going to be undone.
Well, I mean, actually dead in comic logic.
Sure, he's not going to show up.
He had his throat crushed by
Thanos,
if that's what you mean.
And then Gamora got thrown in a pit by Thanos.
Out of love.
I don't remember why.
You don't remember why?
I remember they like went together to a planet, and he like was really conflicted about throwing her in the pit, but he did. But I don't remember what the circumstances were.
This is great.
Oh, and then I saw on Twitter somewhere that someone who I don't think had any useful knowledge predicted that Nebula will get the gauntlet and undo the snap. And I don't understand. I know that Nebula is also Thanos' daughter.
That's right.
But I don't understand why she can get the gauntlet or if that is a real thing that will happen.
Perfect. I want to keep doing this line of questioning, but go through some other things. Your top three favorite Captain America moments.
Oh my god.
Not from Infinity War, like of all time.
Oh, man.
Like you actually remember them and they were.
I suddenly love this segment.
The shot at the beginning of Avengers where it zooms in on his butt while he's punching the punching bag. Like that's nice. Like easy, like number one. Like
now was it a zoom or a dolly push?
It's a dolly. Yeah, sorry. Zoom is incorrect.
Not to get pedantic here, but
No, that's like a major moment in like the make non-heterosexual male gaze in superhero movies. Like I mean, credit to Joss Whedon, who's I believe is a straight man, but like the idea of ogling a male body in a superhero movie, I feel like hadn't happened before that. Him saying he had a date with Peggy Carter at the end. And then I guess.
No love for the Russos here.
Yeah.
Does he have any friends that are important to him?
I think the fight scene with him in Iron Man in.
Yeah. Which movie is
Winter
that?
Soldier? No, Civil War.
Ding, ding,
the one
ding.
Where they're in the cave and the shield bounces off the walls.
Mm-hmm.
That one. I like. I like Winter Soldier's, like the stuff with Bucky, but I don't remember any specific scenes with him that like stand out. Like
that's
his death, the first one's not that good, but I like him as a character. But
that's
good. I'm still building this up. Wait, hold on.
Okay.
All right.
Now the two. You only get two Tony Stark moments.
This was a long time ago. When did Iron Man 3 come out?
What do you mean this is a long time ago? Tony Stark is in so
many. I remember
exactly when
Iron Man 3 came out. Because I was traveling to where I live now, here in North Carolina, to visit my friend who has lived here for a long time. And we went and saw Iron Man 3 at a drive-in, which was awesome. Can I count the reveal of the Mandarin in Iron Man 3? Tony Stark's there.
Yes. Yeah. That's good. That's okay. Fine.
Tony Stark was around for another character's reveal. That's true. Highlight of Tony Stark's career.
It's what came to mind.
Don't quash your moments.
Honestly, like, because I watched it recently and it made me laugh again when he is in the street with Doctor Strange at the beginning of Infinity War and he says, "You're embarrassing me in front of the wizards to the Hulk." It's a good line.
Say
that.
Good.
That's what Robert Downey Jr. does.
Final question before I get to my point. What are the six Infinity Stones?
Oh my God. And what do they do? And what do they do?
But I would never have known any of them if I hadn't just rewatched Infinity War, but I'm still going to mess them up. Soul, time, reality.
Wow.
What's the one that Loki had? I think that one's time.
No. Sorry. I'm not supposed to confirm or deny these things, but I can't help myself. Yeah,
it's okay. It's okay with this.
Oh, the Tesseract was the thing that I'm not thinking of.
Tesseract is technically not.
Matter? Is matter one of
them? Patches, go ahead and.
Oh, no. I've talked off. A big game.
yeah.
Wait, how are there six if they all fit on the glove?
There's five hands
one's
and
in the
then
middle?
One on the back of the hand.
Okay.
Dave is now going to wear an Infinity Gauntlet for the rest of this podcast.
I mean, I could. Okay, Patches, you do the rest of the stones and then we'll get it.
Let's see. Time Stone, Reality Stone, Soul Stone, the Mind Stone.
Okay. That's the one that Vision had?
The Mind Stone. Now I need Dave to come back to confirm. Dave, Mind
Vision's
Stone?
Vision's was on his forehead, so I thought it was Mind. Oh.
We have the Mind Stone.
No, wait.
The Reality Stone.
No, you just press. No, you're. The orange is the Soul Stone.
Sorry, the Mind Stone.
Yeah,
yes,
the Mind Stone is what Vision had. And then you had the Space Stone, which is blue.
Space.
Yeah. And then what's the purple one? That's the missing one.
The purple one was from Guardians of the Galaxy. It is the one that blew up.
Benicio del Toro had?
No, that was the
reality
stone that would later come back in Thor: The Dark World, and
it was
also called the Aether.
Ask me one fact about Thor: The Dark World.
That's the real test. Name anything that happened at Thor: The Dark World. Wait, what is the purple one?
Power.
Oh,
power stone.
The power stone. It's not used very often. I got
to. No, and we kind of skipped over Thanos picking it up because he picks it up before Infinity War starts, so he has it. It
right.
Therefore isn't.
I guess
super
because it
memorable.
Has no cinematic translation. Like, what does it mean? You're stronger. You can punch harder.
It has like great power. Remember when they were using it in Guardians? When they were using it in the Guardians of the Galaxy, if you touched it to the surface of a planet, the planet would start to explode.
That's powerful.
Like overloaded by power. Anyway,
is this good thing for people to listen to?
Of course it is.
What the point I was trying to make is I think you have most of what you need to enjoy the story arcs that are going to play out in Avengers Endgame, despite the fact that I don't think you necessarily know who's alive or dead.
I don't know who's alive or dead.
I mean, you'll find out in the beginning, I would imagine.
But I also know that the commonly accepted knowledge is that anyone who got snapped is coming back. And like, so
yes.
I'm not like, obviously I saw the Spider-Man trailer, so I'm not really going to worry about that.
So the reason I was asking about Infinity Stones is all the ones you were capable of remembering are the ones that are like story-breaking MacGuffins. They can come back through any of those stones. That's what
we're
really...
Well, this is the thing. Like knowing the difference between the Infinity Stones seems really pointless.
Right. I don't think there's a difference as long as you know that some of them have powers like time, like mind, like reality.
Sure.
And so basically, the Infinity War is act one of a three-act movie, and we're about to see the second two acts. But also threaded throughout that is going to be a lot of payoffs to long-form storytelling, which brings up how much do you really have to remember? There's two ways Infinity War or Endgame can go when we finally see it. They could be super nerdy about you knowing what Infinity Stones are where throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe and what their powers are, which I hope they don't. Or it could be as general as, don't you remember these good character moments for Captain America and Thor and Tony Stark? And luckily, although, you know, your Tony Stark moments weren't necessarily about like Pepper Potts or family or anything.
I remember Pepper Potts. I'm aware that she's there.
Yeah, but this is.
Well, I mean, you did.
Yeah.
Family, though. Wait, is John Slattery coming back?
I don't think so.
I hope so.
But you did remember that Spider-Man was dusted.
Yes.
And you know that Tony loves Spider-Man.
Yes.
So, and you did remember that Thanos was very conflicted about throwing Gamora off a cliff.
Yes.
So you would feel like, in order for like Tony to, you know, feel better and make the reversal from starving in space to the hero that we know has to end this series. He has to deal with his concept of losing his son, which he might be obsessed to the point of his faux son, Peter
But
Parker,
isn't that amazing that, like, the dramatic heft of Endgame is coming only from Infinity War? You're describing something that only happened in the last movie, but we're talking about a series that's run for 10 years.
Because these are previous movies that had to stand on their own. Like, hopefully you don't have to have seen every single movie. Like, I think seeing Infinity War before Endgame is a reasonable thing to ask. To remember what happened in Thor the Dark World before seeing this seems unreasonable.
No, I'm not saying that you have to. I'm surprised that I don't feel the weight of every movie before it kind of. Only with Captain America, actually. I think the most successful character in the whole series is Captain America. People who listen to this podcast probably know that my favorite MCU movie is the first Avengers.
America's your ride or die.
Yeah, and that character's come a long way. He's learned something in every movie. It does feel like consistent serial storytelling. I'm not really on board with whatever him and Bucky have. Their relationship does not carry much weight for me, but I do feel like Captain America's fish out of water story and coming to terms with a political world that doesn't totally make sense to him is actually a story that's taken place over many standalone movies and crossover events. I hate Captain America Civil War. I think it's a terrible movie. And I still think Chris Evans' performance and how he challenges the notion of Captain America in every movie, that's like going to get paid off in Endgame. And that's what makes me very excited.
You are certain Captain America is going to die, right?
I'm not certain of that at all.
Really?
The only thing I'm certain of is that Chris Evans will definitely come back again and play Captain America in like 10 years.
But like it'll be a while.
Yeah.
Anyone who reads the comics seems convinced that Captain America is going to die.
I mean, I think it's possible. I talked to the screenwriters of Civil War. I'm going to put up a post on Polygon Suit about
at the junket writing for the movie you hadn't seen.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think everyone there pretty much acknowledge that this is Captain America's movie. He wasn't really in Infinity War because they wanted the second half of this to really be his story and Tony's story, but also, you know, I think his story comes to an end one way or another. It could be dying. It could be something more radical. I can imagine him sacrificing himself and like getting trapped in a stone before I see him die.
He can get trapped in a stone?
He's the Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So,
oh God.
The Adam Warlock, the character that they keep teasing in Guardians of the Galaxy for some reason. Well, not for some reason, because he's connected to Infinity Stones. And that used to be just a cool Easter egg. Used to live inside the Soul Stone. There's a whole world in there called Soul World. So it would be
comics accurate. They really came up with a good name for that.
Yeah. It would be really comics accurate for Captain America to be inside the Soul Stone when, like, they have to redistribute the stones throughout the galaxy or whatever.
I mean,
he gets to be in infinite, almost heaven, and that's not necessarily him dying
either. Yeah, I think there's some speculation. I want to be clear about something. There's some leaky stuff that's happened with this movie. I don't know anything about this. Like, what I'm talking about right now is complete speculation, 100%. But I can imagine a very happy ending. I want to see Peggy back in Endgame. It's really the connective tissue for all this stuff. And if he, you know, he has to sacrifice himself. He has to be bigger than the problem. And I don't know if he gets a happy ending. I don't know if Peggy factors into like going into a Soul Stone or seeing her in the heavens or whatever weird galactic shit is going to happen in Endgame. But he's the only character that has had actual dramatic thrust through this whole thing. I find that surprising. I
don't
care
Tony
about
Stark
Tony
has had dramatic
much.
Thrust through the whole thing.
No, because his trilogy ended so long ago.
Yeah.
No, I don't think Tony Stark's had one dramatic thrust throughout the whole thing. Captain America, it's been very easy to follow him from Man Out of Time through Where Is My Allegiance Go to where he's going to have to be now. Whereas I think Tony Stark had to go from selfish billionaire to having this obsession with needing to protect everything. And that's the journey of Iron Man 1 through 3. And all his cameo movies.
It's more like 1 through 2, because Iron Man 3 feels more like an Avengers sequel because he's dealing with the PTSD from the Battle of New York. Like
but
Avengers.
It's still a character development for him.
Yeah, but
He has to learn to not have the suit, essentially. Is that the him and his suits are different things, and his talent is as Tony Stark superhero. But like Pepper being in danger and the Mandarin and all that is also what makes it, gives him the idea that this infinite suit building can create Ultron. And then Tony's story becomes Avengers centric, not Iron Man centric.
Right.
Can I ask you guys, like, and Dave, I know you kind of know a lot about this movie, so I don't want to spoil anything, but like, for me, the Marvel movies and like Ant-Man and the Wasp is kind of like the ideal version of this where I watched it and I was like, that was fine and enjoyable. But all of them kind of feel like that to me where I'm like, huh, okay. I watched all these pieces fall together. I enjoyed myself and then it kind of disappears, obviously. But what do you guys feel emotionally invested in going into this? Like, Patches, you want to see Captain America like have his proper ending. Like, Dave, where's your emotional investment at this point?
On Reddit.
In being right in your predictions of what's going to happen.
In the fury of everyone adding him on Twitter after the fact.
Yeah, I'm not... where are my emotional expectations on this point? I'm not as concerned with who's going to live and who's going to die as I thought, because some of the things that leaked were not dour thing. No death scenes leaked or anything like that. We still have no idea who like lives or dies. And then they were all like weird plotty things that when I saw them, I'm like, oh, like that's cool. I can't wait to see while that happens. It wasn't any of the stuff, like the actual story beats that are going to make this movie worthwhile. But it also wasn't as depressing as the trailers have been and all the teases have been, where it's like, obviously they put pop culture through something traumatic by the way Infinity War ended, and then putting like a lockdown on like what the next step is, even up through the first two trailers. But now I think there's a whole middle and the second and third acts of this second and third act are like like, I don't know, Back to the Future 2 levels amounts of fun.
I like Back to the Future 2.
We should be, yeah, that's what we should be expecting. We shouldn't, like, this is a victory lap movie. This isn't, they're not out to traumatize us.
Well, I've been thinking about Game of Thrones, which is happening around the same time. And again, like, I'm not spoiling anything, but like, we're preparing for a whole bunch of characters to die in next week's Game of Thrones, which will air 3 days after Infinity War opens. And I feel really invested in making sure everyone's stories wrap up and what happens to Theon and like whether or not he's going to have a hero's death. And I don't feel that way at all about Thor, mostly because I don't feel convinced that it's going to be the last we see of any of them. Like, maybe like Hawkeye's got a thing. Like, even like the characters you don't think are that popular, they're probably going to be back.
That's why all comparisons for the Marvel films to television is incorrect. Like, the Game of Thrones episode we just saw, where we get all these reunions and we feel this pleasure of wrap up, where Tyrion and Jaime get to share stories from four seasons ago. And if you remember that stuff well, it resonates more. But even there's a visceral pleasure of just like, you know that they've met, and we felt that heft as they've gone in different directions across Westeros, and now that they're back and drinking wine and sharing stories, it's like being with old friends. And the Marvel movies do not have the luxury of like having downtime like this, like having an episode like the Night of Seven Kingdoms, whatever it was called, episode 2, where you can just sit around and reconnect before the huge battle. I don't expect Endgame to be able to kind of take a breath. There's obviously going to be like sitting around wondering how to maybe collect the Infinity Stones again or combat Thanos, but it's going to be very plot driven. And yet I do expect kind of weird, hopefully not truncated, but I expect it to be truncated wrap up on, Katie, plots that I can only imagine you not remembering, which is like, do you remember who Black Widow's romance love interest is in these movies?
She's like, she and the Hulk kind of have a friendship thing? Is that, was that a romance? When did that become a
romance? It's definitely a romance. Dave, they touch hands in that one scene.
In Age of Ultron, it becomes a romance.
And that was a long time ago.
Also out of nowhere, but they do keep bringing it up. They bring it up in like Thor Ragnarok. They have like some, they teased it in the trailer for, anyway, but yes, it's going to be a thing.
It's going to be a thing, and it's going to be a weird thing because it really hasn't been built up and there's no time for that sort of thing. You know, going back to our first segment, I'm interested to see how Disney Plus can kind of fill in some blanks, if there's can be more television parts of this mega story. I don't know if it'll be as interwoven as it was in the Infinity Saga, but
well, I do. Yeah, I we were talking about this, like the idea that whether the Avengers name will be retired after this, and I am certain this is not the last of many of these people, but I do think the interconnectedness of this, I would be surprised if they tried to either build off of this continuing or tried to immediately start building something similarly ambitious right away.
I'm just waiting for Silver Surfer to swoop in the post-credits scene and bring Galactus to Earth again.
Oh, I hope none of that happens.
Do we think, I mean, again, like, Dave, if you know for sure, I guess don't tell us, but, like, is Dark Phoenix going to, like, have an explicit tie-in to all of this somehow?
I don't know anything for sure, but I think that's too late. I would be, really crazy. Surprised if Endgame has a... If Endgame has a introduction of a Fox licensed character into the MCU, that is like the first Avengers where they shot the post credit scene after the premiere,
right,
in terms of shit to untangle to get that to happen.
Well, I was more thinking that Dark Phoenix, which has been chopped up in a million pieces already, would like have Falcon show up at the end or something like that.
No, everyone should get snapped out of existence. It should actually take place between Infinity War and Endgame, but no resolution. Like, they're just out.
Maybe they came back.
No, we couldn't bring them back, but we got everyone else.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is like a comic book thing that nobody stays dead, but I do think that Marvel has a pivot point here to stop telling these, like, phasic stories where you do tell an individual hero's story and then they team up. I think we're going to have a lot more of what Phase 3 turned into, which is just you start pairing heroes off together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not necessarily the Avengers, but, you know, Captain Marvel and Spider-Man get a movie or something.
I
would watch that movie.
I would see that movie too, but that's probably not going to be the
one.
We're
kidding.
But
if
I had to roll my dice, it's going to be Doctor Strange and Namor.
Namor?
Who's Namor?
You haven't even done Namor yet.
Get it back from Universal.
Oh, good luck.
Universal, get in on that sweet Doctor
Katie,
Strange.
Katie, to wrap this segment up.
You can tell me who Namor is?
No, I'm not going to do that because you'll have to Wikipedia or listen to Dave.
Myself.
No, that's
he's the Marvel Aquaman.
That's part of our Patreon that you specifically
good.
Have to buy into.
It's also going to be Jason Momoa.
You ask Dave what he's emotionally invested in with your tenuous relationship to the Marvel movies that you enjoy fleetingly every time they come out. Is there anything, do you have any emotional investment? Do you care what happens in this movie? Is there anything you want to see or that would feel like payoff to you?
I mostly don't care what happens in this movie. I do care about Captain America and Peggy. Like, I think I have thought about it enough to think that it is likely enough to happen that I really want to see that. I like Thor, but I don't feel like there's an emotional connection with Thor at all.
What about Jane Foster? Remember when they kissed?
I just saw Natalie Portman was on the red carpet for Endgame. So like,
she was.
Yeah. Like, I don't like that might be an Endgame spoiler. I don't know. Maybe she just showed up to play nice, but she was there.
Whoa! I gotta say something. Jane Foster and Thor, most romantic, best relationship in the MCU, extreme chemistry out the wazoo.
I liked them a lot. The
Thor
first Thor, they are really good together.
They are. They have like Superman 78 kind of like vibes when they're in that dusty town and hanging out and getting sucked up in by a rainbow. That was beautiful.
The other thing I was going to say is I care about Iron Man and Spider-Man. Like that father-son relationship, I like want to see that get settled. Like I'm not really worried about him and Pepper Potts. Like I feel like Tony Stark's going to live for, I don't know why, I just feel like he will, and he and Pepper Potts will get married, but, like, I want, like, Spider-Man, like, because the reason I remember Spider-Man is for him, like, him dying and, like, talking to Iron Man and how, like, scary and sad that was. So that I feel like they've done a good job setting up. Everything
Iron
else,
Man,
whatever.
Iron Man has to live.
All right.
Robert Downey Jr.'s $175 yes. million Dr. Doolittle movie is not going to collect its returns.
Well, not only that, but if you have Tony Stark in a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, it makes like at least $40 million more.
He'll be the new Nick Fury.
And he gets paid $10 million per one, so that's just even $30 million more. It's just like, okay, so Iron Man lives because he's too profitable. Thor lives because it doesn't make sense for him story-wise after he's lost everything. To just be like, and that was the end of the Asgardians. the great Infinity War. And then Hawkeye lives because he's got a Disney Plus show.
And Black Widow, right?
You think all of those shows take place after Endgame?
No. and to both of your answers.
Oh.
Mind blown. Mind stone blown.
We should probably say that we're going to talk about this movie when we've all seen it next week with yes. David.
So, because we don't talk enough about the Disney culture.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. That's
The
that's
Matrix
a good point.
Isn't a Disney movie, at least.
Yet.
But yeah. We'll talk about it more and actually know things. Just to reiterate, we're just speculating now.
Yeah. I clearly know nothing, so I look forward to knowing something by next week. That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. As I said, we'll be back next week to talk about Avengers Endgame and process everything that we have finally learned and everything I will have already forgotten by the time we record. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I'm Matt Patches, senior editor at Polygon.com, which you should definitely read because there's blood, sweat, and tears on the page as we cover Avengers and Game of Thrones all at once while trying to cover things that aren't either of those properties this week. It's going to get crazy. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches, and we have a website, fightinginthewarroom.com, where you can listen to episodes, you can share them with friends, that's very important, and you can leave comments that we'll dig up, and we can even share them here.
You can also leave us a review, which is usually what David Ehrlich would say right here. But I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my writing about Game of Thrones at Thrillist.com. You can find my podcast, Star Wars Spoilers, which this week is not only doing our usual like hour and a half long Game of Thrones breakdown, but is doing an Avengers Endgame episode, which is going to be of indeterminate length. We had to do two episodes to fit in our four-hour Infinity War discussion. So I'm going to be very tired, but I'm going to be podcasting for you over at Star Wars Spoilers.
And I'm Katie Rich. You can find me at VanityFair.com, where Joanna Robinson, who we all love and adore, is doing heroic work on the new season of Game of Thrones, and will probably be doing heroic work on the new season of Avengers. Not a new season. It's the end.
No, it's the new season.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Katie Rich, and you can find us all on Twitter at FITWR, where you can talk to us about your Avengers Endgame theories. Please no spoilers, or answer this week's lightning round question, which was:
in honor of Avengers Endgame, what genre film has your favorite climactic death?
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.